Good afternoon. Welcome along to Saturday Sport Classified. Thank you very much for having me on. It is really nice to be back in your company again. I hope you're having a really nice bank holiday weekend so far. Long may that continue. Now, as I just said, I have a lot of sport news for you, but particularly I've got a lot of football news for you today. So we'll start with that, shall we? And I'm delighted to welcome into the studio once again the one and only Tony Metham. How are you, Tony?
I'm fine, thank you. And both of us have got a bit of colour on our cheeks, haven't we?
Oh, do we? Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you have. You're lovely. You're doing well. And you can tell I work outside. I've got the T-shirt tan.
Wow, but, that's an impressive tan.
Yeah, the weather's been great. And, you know, it's really nice. And today I listened to the radio throughout the afternoon with the Red Arrows and everything.
Did you see them?
Unbelievable.
They were fantastic, weren't they?
Unbelievable. Yeah, it was really good to see. And it was just nice to hear the commentary as well on the radio because, you know, just telling us what went on. Normally you just watch them and you haven't got a clue or what the event is that they're doing, but now it's spot on. A lot of people watching it, and yeah. I think with the weather, it's just finished it off, and I'm sure a lot of people will be down Bushies tonight as well. So the island's buzzing on this long
it
bank
was
holiday.
Buzzing. Yeah,
it is.
Did you see the heart that they?
Drew? I did.
I think
I
that
did.
Was for me. I was trying to catch their eyes as they went past, and then they did that. So I was like, oh, it worked.
You wish.
Brutal. Okay, right. So lots of news in the world of football. Let's start though. Let's talk about last night. So Corinthians took on Russian United in the Eric Fletcher Charity Shield at the Bowl. I believe Corinthians came out on top with a 2-0 win, but the match was about much more than that. So can you tell me a little bit more about Eric Fletcher and what the match was in aid of?
I certainly can. Well, I joined the FA in 1984, I think it was, and Eric Fletcher had just stood down as president, and Peter Kelly took over. And I think Eric Fletcher was something like 25 years, which is absolutely incredible. Great man. And I learned so much from him because he was never frightened to pass on his experience and what he'd learned. Okay, we go into different decades, but he was just a great, great man. And it was different then because he used to go across the road because the FA headquarters were in Bucks Road and go to the Rose Mount and have a shandy, as it was then, because I didn't live far away, and just listen to him. Great stories, great man. And the Eric Fletcher Charity Shield has been there. I think it was just late 80s when it first started. I think St Mary's might have won it for the first one. And it was a great event. But last night's game, I only watched the first half because I had a 60th birthday party to go to. And if I hadn't gone to that, I think I'd be divorced today. So I watched the first half, and it was one of them. We didn't know where it was going to go because Russian, obviously, Jack Kamada, Dean Kearns, the goalkeeper, I think Furu Davies as well, was you know, down to play for FC Alaman today. But Corinthians lost six players. You know, Dan Simpson couldn't play, Steve Whitley, Sean Doyle, Luke Murray, Ryan Burns, and, you know, Matthew Quirk couldn't. And it was just see how it went. But one or two players have stepped up the mark for Corinthians now. And the Riding boys last night, Josh and Kane, were absolutely flying. And Kane's this type of player that he's either brilliant or rubbish. There's no in between. Sorry, Kane, if you're listening. Last night, he was outstanding. His first goal, about 10 minutes, right-footed, predominantly lefty ears, and he just caught the goalkeeper out and made it 1-0 to Corinthians. And then Josh Ridings with a sheer bit of skill, just outside the box, I think it was, and he turned and smashed it in to make it 2. It looks like I'm singling all to Corinthians, but I didn't really see too many chances from Russian. I know Conor Gorman hit the post. Josh Ridings had one disallowed in the second half. And from what I saw, the first 45, Corinthians deserved it. It was a much changed side for Russian. But, you know, Corinthians seemed to cover the holes better than the players that they lost, because the four forwards last year scored 134 goals for Corinthians. They've lost them. So it's a rebuild job. And I think Blaine Slattery and the boys got it right last night what to do and nullify Mikey Williams. And Mikey didn't get too many chances, and he's FC Alaman. And also, we've got to remember, Alex Maitland, FC Alaman, they played last night because Mikey wasn't going to play, and Alex, fortunately for Russian, was moving house this weekend, so he couldn't play for FC Alaman, so he played for Russian. So yeah, it's going to be a rare season this year, and I'm not going to look forward to it, really, with the way teams are at the moment, losing so many players.
Well, let's talk about what's coming up this season, because one of the island's top contenders in Manx football won't be making an appearance in the new season. St Mary's has said It's been left with no other option but to pull out because of a lack of players. Now, before we talk about this, I'm going to play an interview that I did earlier this week with club chairman Josh Evans, not a relation of mine.
The way Manx football's going now is that players want to play in Div 2 and want to play with their mates and want it to be more relaxed, and they kind of want to just turn up on a Saturday, not worry about training and stuff. So the bigger clubs like us, Old Boys, St George's, are struggling for numbers, whereas quite a handful of Div 2 teams like your Pull Roses, your D&Ds, Onken have got good numbers, Malou have got good numbers.
You think that there's a mindset moving away from the more competitive to the more enjoyable?
Completely, yeah. I think the way Manx football is going, it's more like Sunday League.
Do you think the pandemic has had a knock-on effect on football in any way?
Yeah, I think definitely. I think you look at it last summer, we were all in lockdown and obviously football just wasn't going ahead. And in my sort of circles anyway, and people my age, they all kind of took up golf because that was kind of the first thing that you could do on the island. You could go around as a household by yourself first, then as a household, and then you could go around with friends. And me and all my friends have definitely taken up golf. And I think that's a case with a lot of like younger generation on the island. And it kind of takes up 3 hours of your day, and then you can get along with everything else, and you can kind of pick whenever you want to play it, on a Saturday, on a Sunday, in the afternoon, early, whereas football is just not as flexible as that. And yeah, I think that's what a lot of people want nowadays. It's more flexibility.
St Mary's club chairman there, Josh Evans. So what do you make of that, Tony?
Great interview for a start. You know, Craig Cowan was the secretary for St Mary's last year, and he's called it a day, and he's gone as bagman or kitman, if you like, for FC Isle of Man. And Josh has come in, and Josh was chair last year and bust him with enthusiasm, but they just couldn't pull it off. And the Isle of Man FA have tried to help them as much as they can, but the Isle of Man FA can't go around picking players up and bring them down. The club has to sell itself, and the players need to want to play for them. And it was just a real chance conversation I had last year with Frank Jones, because Frank was going to play for FC Isle of Man if it had gone ahead, but it couldn't because of the pandemic. And I said, Frank, you need to hang in there, Frank, because the rest of the players will probably leave if you go. And the way it is, I know Josh said two players. Well, there's three. You know, there's Alex Harrison, who's just coming back from injury. He's training with FC Isle of Man now. He would have played for St Mary's. You've got Jack McVeigh and Frank Jones. Now, you look at those three players there. They're arguably three of the best players on the island. So the rest of them have all looked at it and thought, this is going to be a real struggle. They had no combination. And the real sad thing is, when you look further back to that, which is, you know, pre-pandemic, they'd won the league, they won the combination one, and they won the Junior Cup. Okay, they won, I think, the combination one and the Junior Cup with players from other clubs. But then the following year, they all left. So I don't sort of get that one. And this is a problem. To me, the problem is in football is a bit of loyalty and the way players can move about so easily. And the transfer season's the 31st of December. That's not the Isle of Man FA's rule. It's the English FA. They put it in place that the English FA are losing so many footballers and so many clubs in UK that they're trying to stop it by bringing in, to me, some bizarre rules. And unfortunately, because we're a county associated with the English FA, we have to follow suit.
Are we seeing what's happening with St Mary's happening with many other clubs?
There's some clubs out there struggling. Well, let's look at what we were talking about last year, Pull Rose and Castletown. Pull Rose had one team, and Pull Rose were really close to, you know, calling it a day, just like St Mary's. But they had a forward-thinking chairman in Mo Powsland, and a real good committee, and I'm talking committee of an average age, 68, 70. But they just gave everything. They worked at the clubhouse to improve that so they could have something comfortable and nice to get changed in. And now Pull Rose, Ray, have got 40 players registered.
That's such a Cinderella story.
It's mega.
Yeah.
And I think they've got a great chance of finishing top four this year.
Well, we were all, I think, secretly rooting for Pulley last year because they just had a bit of a rough season, didn't they? And you couldn't help but feel for them when it seemed like they were putting in all this effort and it was just like, when are they going to get their reward? And now it seems like it's finally paid off. That persistence is, you know, is working.
No, it is. And, you know, the Isle of Man FA worked with them. both teams, Castletown and Pulrose, said if we're in the Premier League, then we're probably going to fold or something because we're going to get absolutely battered on a Saturday, and they didn't want that. So the English FA allowed us, because of the pandemic, to give them the option, and they wanted that option. Castletown now, as far as I know, they're in the 40 bracket with players. The only thing is with Castletown, it's a difficult one, is that I think 10 players have gone from Colby to Castletown, which has now drawn Colby into the problem, and Castletown have got good numbers, but it's happened so many times to Castletown where they have great young players and suddenly they get the suitcases and all move on. And this year they're flavour of the month, and you know, credit to both clubs, they've worked tirelessly behind the scenes and they've got it together, but unfortunately this year there's two or three other clubs.
How does that resonate with the clubs in terms of tension and relationships?
I think it can cause a few problems, but at the end of the day, it's not the clubs that have done it, it's the players. The players have chose to leave Colby to go to Castletown, so you can't blame Castletown. Mm. So Colby have got to have a look and say, why have these players left, and work that out themselves. And, you know, that's what they've got to do. I think the Premier League this year is different. St George's, Russian, Corinthians have lost so many players to FC Isle of Man. Now, Corinthians at six, they've taken another one who played last night for Monday. So Corinthians now have lost seven first-team players. And it was funny last night that I was stood next to a guy and he said, I just thought Corinthians would have been a little bit better with the way they were on the way with the league last year. And I said, they've lost, if you like, six Ireland players tonight to play for FC Isle of Man tomorrow. I'm not bitter about it. We've just got to get on with what we've got left. And hopefully the younger players can step up. It's going to take a little bit of time. Are they good enough? Yes, they are.
Well, let's talk about FC Isle of Man, because I did speak to Josh about it, and it was missed out of that interview, but I asked him if FC Isle of Man had anything to do with their lack of players, and he was like, oh, maybe a little bit, but I don't begrudge them. I think what FC Isle of Man is doing is fantastic, and I wish it had been around like when I was younger, something to aspire to. So what do you think? I mean, we knew going in to FC Isle of Man that it was going to have a ripple effect on the local scene, but just how much of an impact is it having?
Massive. It's having a massive effect. Did we not expect this? Yes, we did. We knew it was coming. I remember Paul Jones doing the presentation in the FA, and I chaired the meeting, and Paul just said, it's not really going to affect the clubs and things like that. And I just said, hold on here, Paul. I said, you potentially are going to take five or six Corinthians players. So it is going to affect the club. But we're up for the challenge. And I think the other clubs are as well. But it's just unfortunate that, you know, St Mary's didn't have a combination side to sort of back them up. And I do really hope that they can pull it together for next season and get back in. Yes, they'll go Division 2, but that will help them. But the problem is at the moment for FC Isle of Man, I feel for them. You know that their first nine games, is it, are away. So the players are having to sort of get up this morning at 5 o'clock, travel on the boat 6:30, play the game, then travel back. They get home at whatever, 10-ish. And it's 8 weeks solid. It's just a shame it's not home and away. Mm. Am I against FC Isle of Man? No, I'm not. But it is causing a few problems. And all we've got to do is try and iron them problems out. And I'm going to ask, he doesn't know it yet, but a couple of things have cropped up today. I'm going to ask for a meeting with Paul Jones, because I just think there's a couple of things that he, not necessarily promised, but he said would happen, hasn't happened. One of them is, you know, players are finding out, or clubs are finding out, that some of their players are playing on a Thursday. Well, that's no good. You know, the deal was a Wednesday night training, so then the information could go to the club manager and he can make a decision if he's going to play them. Like Dan Simpson played for Corinthians last week. We sort of knew early on that it was going to happen because Dan had an event on, so he was here on the island. But we need to know, and it's not fair on the clubs. It's not fair to be treated like that. So that's something they've got to look at and correct it.
Well, for those of you who aren't up to date on FC Isle of Man, how they're doing so far this season, they have had 3 draws, 1 win, and unfortunately this afternoon they actually got their first loss against West Didsbury 1-0. So those results, are they expected?
I don't know. Marine, the first game of the season, it's one of them. It's a little bit of nerves and stuff. The other two, what, they've played five now, is it? Have they played five or is it four?
So 3 draws, 1 win and 1 loss, so yeah, five.
So the 3-0, great performance. But the fixture today was always going to be tough. I don't know exactly, because it's really poor to get information. It's like today, I've been cutting the grass this afternoon, I had my headphones on, and only that I've come in the studio, I found out what the score is. So that's another thing that needs to be sorted out. You know, the Isle of Man people want to know what's going on, and it's all right having Twitter or something like that, but if you're bombing around in the car, you're not doing that. So we'll address that this week. It's just a teething problem that we need to get.
FC Isle of Man, I know, has approached me and Chris Cave about being... travelling reporters with them, basically.
Yep.
But with that's been quite difficult with the COVID regulations and whatnot. But I do know that Chris Cave, I think, went to their first game and did a really good job. But it'd be good to like get something.
Yeah, we need the information. It's like, I think it's Steve Burns. I think it's on the Thursday. He does a piece about the club that they're playing. That's brilliant. Mm. We know what they're on. But, you know, today was always going to be a tough game for them. Monday is the same because I think... they're either third or fourth in the league, the two teams that they're playing, or it's fourth and fifth. And then I think there's a cup game coming up and they're going to play the winners of, I can't remember who it was, against Sandbach. Sandbach's the top of the league and then they could play Isle of Man. I'd love to see that game, but I suppose that's going to be away as well. But, you know, I was hoping to travel to the first game, but just with COVID kicking around, really, I'm self-employed. I'm not going to take a chance to go over there and possibly get COVID and come back and then sit at home for 2 weeks and not get paid.
Yeah.
So I want to listen to the radio. I want to listen what's going on. And that's something that Manx Radio are working with FC Isle of Man to try and get it correct. And with sport on next Saturday, it's going to be a lot easier because if I can get the information as well, then I can put it through because we want to give them maximum publicity of how they're doing. But unfortunately today, we didn't know what was going on. So
too distracted by the red arrows.
Well, it was, yeah.
Damn
it
those
was. But,
planes.
You know, another day. I think some of the players are staying in Liverpool tonight, so they're okay for Monday. Some are travelling back because they've got things on tomorrow. And I think there'll be a few players a little bit different from Saturday to Monday, which is great, but sticking fast. And they're training at 6:30 in the morning. And I was winding Lee Dixon up last night. I said, you're getting little bags under your eyes because he's having to get up so early. But there's a reason why they're doing that.
Yeah.
I don't know why, because the bowl's available. They could train there at night time. I noticed he trained at Geordie's.
I remember Paul saying to me that he wanted them to train in the morning to get them their body clocks used to being up and ready to go at that time because they would have to be travelling. So.
You're never going to get Dan Simpson's body clock converted to R6. That's just here. No chance. He's a 10 o'clock job before he wakes up. It's not going to happen.
Okay, moving on from FC Isle of Man, we're looking at the women's game and Castletown women's team, they beat Douglas High School Old Boys Women, which is a funny name, 2-0 in the Summer Plate final.
Yep.
This week, and also congratulations to Corinthians Women, whose quest for Ireland and then I'm assuming global domination is continuing to go from strength to strength because they beat Douglas Royal this week to be crowned champions of the Summer League. But there's all sorts going on in the Women's League structure this season as well.
There is. Simon Elson's put an awful lot of effort in working with the clubs. He's got a new club to join, which is Oncombe, which is brilliant. Brian Callow's leading that. And there's some really good players who've come back into football. They were hockey players, Kaylee Callow and others who have come back in, Leanne Prescott, and they're playing the football, which is great to see. So after a meeting with the women's team's managers, we've come up with a plan that we'll start off with a league of seven. So they all play each other once. And then after they've played their six games, then we'll split the top three or top four. What we're going to look at is that team that finishes fourth. If they're closer to the top three than the bottom three, they might just go into that top league. There's no point in going into Division 2 and walking away with it. Let the other teams have a go. And then we're going to play each other. I think it's three times then. So just say for talking sake, I would think Corinthians, Douglas High School Old Boys and Douglas Royal will be in that top group. So they'll play each other three or four times. We'll suss that out nearer the time. And then the teams in the Division 2, they'll play themselves, you know, three times. But the interesting one is that the first set of fixtures, when they played on grass, when they're all one group, the scores will count in their relative leagues. So just say for talking sake, Onken are Division 2 and Corinthians are Division 1, that score is null and void. But if it's sort of Castletown and Onken, and whatever score it was in the first group of fixtures, that score will count. So it puts a bit of meaning on the fixtures, but also gives them the opportunity to play against some really class players, and hopefully that will teach them, you know, the methods, because some of the players that are playing there certainly in the lower teams, are only young, so they're going to get better.
Brilliant. And it's Onken's very first season, isn't it?
Onken's first season. They've been working at it hard. Annette Brycliffe, who works tirelessly for Onken's girls team, credit to her. And I think this is what's helping, because some of them players are starting to come through now. But something's happened today, and I think we're in a place to announce it, because it's come from the club, is that Douglas High School Old Boys players on block have now transferred or moving to Union Mills. They just thought it was the best way to do it. Whatever's gone on, the club have discussed it. So now it'll still be seven teams, but instead of Old Boys being in there, it'll be Union Mills. So that's another interesting thing. But
hot off the press, that.
Yeah, but anything can happen in football, really, at the moment. There's so much sort of rumour mill going on out there. Certainly when you look at the Premier League and Division 2, who's going to win it, what's going on and who's going. It's hard to keep track of it all. But yeah, we're going to get there. And this time next week, we'll be talking about the results, which is what it's all about. That's what we want.
Excellent stuff. Well, what a whirlwind of emotions. Long may it continue. Thank you very much, Tony Meffin. It's lovely to have you back in the studio. Go work on the rest of your T-shirt tan.
I will. And I'll see you next Saturday about half four.
Excellent. Sounds good. It's
looking
a date.
Looking forward to it. Okay. Manx
Radio Saturday Sport. Now, a couple of words I haven't used in a while. Rugby is back. So it's been about 6 months that I'm sure has felt like a decade since rugby has happened on the island. So it's very exciting that you local players finally have some games to look forward to tomorrow at Vagabonds Rugby Club. I have rugby mastermind Dave Christian on the phone to tell you more about what's on the horizon. Dave, what is the atmosphere like on the rugby scene at the moment going into these pre-season friendlies after such a long time out?
Yeah, I mean, the last game, Rhiannon, was 21st of February, I think. I'm going from memory now. So the guys are, everyone's a little bit rusty, but looking forward to getting into it. Douglas gets straight back into it next weekend. They're away at Vale of Lune in North One West. Keen to get a little bit of game time under the belt after training hard through the summer. For everybody else, it is domestic rugby, and those fixtures get underway. I think it's the 2nd of October the fixtures actually start, but we've got the series of friendlies just to get everybody back into the swing of things. And that first one underway on Bank Holiday Sunday, of all days. There was far too much going on Saturday afternoon, and everybody decided it would be a much better idea to get the rugby friendly played on Sunday. There's no timetable to go to. The Red Arrows, there's Tin Bath Racing in Ramsey. There's all sorts of things going on Bank Holiday Saturday. So the Sunday was the chosen day. Players all looking forward to it. It's a little bit the same as the start of last season. We played regional friendlies. We split the island up into four quarters, north, south, east and west. And the teams did a little bit of training together and then met up for game weekends. And everybody played each other once, which give... I think it's 80 minutes before everyone, so it worked out really well. This season we're going to try and do something different. It was the British and Irish Lions played this summer, so the format is going to be sort of an Isle of Man Lions team. It's going to be the place of birth, Isle of Man against the rest of the world. All the clubs are sending in some players, and when they get up there, they'll mix them up and form two teams, get them played for an hour or so, and then for the last 20 minutes there'll be a reshuffle around. Douglas's first team will form up and they'll play everybody else who's still there, just to give them 20 minutes worth of game time ahead of their league fixture against Vale of Lune next Saturday. Domestically, next Saturday there is a free weekend. It's the Gran Fondo, the cycling event, and a lot of the clubs are providing marshals for the event. So we decided that we wouldn't play any fixtures at all on the 4th of September, other than that Douglas fixture away at Vale of Lune in North One West. And then everybody will regroup on the 11th of September for the Isle of Man versus the rest of the world, round two.
Excellent. What are you expecting from these pre-season matches on Sunday?
Not a lot, if I'm honest. It'll be competitive because runners are by nature a competitive species. But I don't think we're going to see any great surprises or anything like that. The lads will just be using them to dust off the cobwebs. Get 3 weekends of this in, and then they've been to those competitive fixtures in the Manx Trophy and the Manx Bowl for the 2nd of October. That competition gets underway. But no, I don't see any surprises. Probably a lot of scrimmages and a lot of drop balls, if I'm honest. Normally what happens at the start of the season, but this season is a little bit worse because the guys have pretty much had 6 months off competitive fixtures.
Are there any big changes that we can expect from this season?
No, I don't think so. It's going to be a wait and see, to be honest. Douglas had a number of overseas players in their side at level six 2 seasons ago when they were last playing competitively. Those players have drifted away, and it'll be interesting to see what sort of side they pull out for that fixture against Vale of Loon. I'll be watching for the squad news with a little bit of interest there. I think domestically, Ramsey and Vagabonds unable to get into a league. There just isn't anything for them to go into, notwithstanding that travelling's always a little bit difficult right now with the COVID and all the rest of it. So Ramsey and Vagabonds dropping into a domestic league, it's going to be pretty much what we saw at the beginning of last season. But hopefully that should make for a little bit of competition, because Southern Nomads and Douglas Celts have pretty much had it all their own way for a long number of years now, with Ramsey and Vagabonds playing league rugby. And without them playing in the leagues, it'll level things up a bit, and Nomads and Douglas will, well, like I said, they're not going to get their own way as much as they used to.
Well, thank you very much, Dave Christian. Sorry it was a bit blippy at points. I will make sure to have someone sacked. Best of luck to all of you competing tomorrow. Your patience knows no bounds, so I really hope you have some cracking first games back in action.
Manx Radio Saturday Sport.
Hockey now, but alas, Sam Cutlery Spooner isn't in the studio with me today, but that doesn't mean I don't have some good hockey news for you. So it's been a very busy few months for up-and-coming hockey star Sienna Dunn. She's been through trials for the under-16 England hockey squad, got selected, then was given the role of captain during one of her debut international matches. Now she's out of the under-16s and has to go through the whole process again for the under-18s. She came up to Douglas Head for a catch-up with me earlier this week.
I think the highlight was actually like being cut down to the final squad, and like once you're cut down to the final squad, you start to like form the relationships within the team and make new friends and like build the team bond, basically.
A lot has happened since we last spoke. So you were going to trials and then you got into the squad, and since then you've played some international matches. So can you talk me through how those games have been for you?
So first we played Wales down in Millfield, and that was like the first game. That was good. It was quite nerve-wracking because I hadn't played in like a big fixture such as that since Futures Cup, which was in 2019, which is before the pandemic. So like trying to get back into the mindset of like elite sport, it's difficult, and I was quite nervous. But as soon as like the first whistle went, it was fine.
It's always the build-up, isn't it, that's worse than the thing itself. How do you sort of manage your nerves?
I'd say maybe just not thinking about it too much, just focusing on your own game, but then as well soaking up the atmosphere. Because if you get too much in your own mind, you start questioning yourself and your ability.
And so not only did you get selected, you actually got picked. Did you get picked to captain or vice-captain the squad?
Yeah, I got to captain the squad in one of the games, which is where we kind of played like a composite under-17 England team. So that was a really great experience too.
That's brilliant. How did it feel to sort of get asked to captain that squad so quickly after being selected?
It was a privilege. Like, there was people in the squad that had been in the previous year and they were all captaining. So it felt good.
So what's next on the horizon for you with the squad?
We as a squad have split up now, and the whole process starts again from September. So now I move up an age group to the under-18s and I have to go through the whole trialing process again.
Oh gosh, there's like no rest for the wicked.
No, really not.
How are you feeling about going for the new age group?
It's obviously going to be more of a challenge, and it's going to put me out of my comfort zone again, not knowing people. But again, I'm just hoping it to be a great experience.
Sienna Dunn there, a huge congratulations to her, and I must say it's always a lovely interview with her and her mum Bernie. And I'd like to give a quick shout out to Sienna's very proud granddad. So Robert, if you're listening, I hope you have your feet up with a glass of something strong and are enjoying the show.
Manx Radio Saturday Sport.
It's It's almost time for me to leave you, but I have a few little nice stories to leave you with. And as we speak, around 40 teams, including 75 cancer survivors, are in the middle of a 24-hour walk around the NSC track in support of Relay for Life Isle of Man. So it started earlier this afternoon and has been described as a celebration of a year-long campaign. Relay for Life Isle of Man is hoping to hit £1 million raised for Cancer Research UK since the organisation began 12 years ago. Event chair Nicola Walkingshaw says that goal is within touching distance.
I'm really hopeful we can do it, and it will be absolutely testament to absolutely everybody that's been involved since day one. Every committee member, every fundraiser, every relayer, every survivor that's just inspired that one more person will help to make a difference.
£1 million for cancer research. That is absolutely incredible. Huge good luck to all of you involved. It is such an admirable cause. Me and the Manx Radio team are cheering you on from up here on Douglas Head. And if that doesn't give you the motivation to keep going, then I just don't know what will. Drifting away from the NSC, more 24-hour action has been happening at Nobles Park, where the man, machine and local fell runner Neil Brogan completed a 24-hour runathon in aid of Nobles Hospital this morning. So well done to you, Neil. That is a fantastic effort. I'm not going to lie, you're all making me feel quite terrible about my contribution to charity and the community as a whole, so I'm going to have to think of something to do. Maybe a 24-hour radio show? Then you guys can all listen to me slip into hysteria and have a mental breakdown live on air. And some exciting news in the world of netball. Big changes are being made to the 2021-2022 senior netball season. An extra division is being added into the mix, meaning teams will now compete in one of four leagues instead of one of three. So the new championship division will be one under the premiership. And this season will also see the island's first men's team taken to the court on Sunday mornings. And this is an historical moment for Manx netball, as it's never been done before. So the team is called the Manx Fellas, and they will compete in the Premiership Division. Other teams in the league will be given the option on whether they would like to play the match or whether they would like to opt out. Opening games for the new season get underway on Sunday, the 12th of September. But that's not all. November is going to be a huge month for netball at the NSC. Isle of Man Netball has announced the national senior side will take on Wales in a three-match test series on the 12th and 13th of November in front of a home crowd at the NSC. So this will be an opportunity for the Manx Rams to take to the court for ranking matches up against a top 10 side. Wales are currently ranked 9th in the world, while the Isle of Man, we are ranked 23rd. The matches will be added extras to the Under-21s Netball Europe Open tournament, which the island is also hosting at the same time. And before that, before the Test Series and the Under-21s Netball Europe Open, in November, the Manx Rams will be competing in the Netball Europe Open Challenge in October in Gibraltar. So if you like netball, you're basically going to get a three-month Christmas this year. And on that cheery note, I shall leave you to your Super Manx Bank holiday. I hope it's living up to its name. I've really enjoyed being back with you this afternoon. Thank you very much for having me on and keeping me company. Much appreciated, as always. I'm already looking forward to speaking to you during the week. But until then, good luck in all your sporting endeavours. Play hard and have fun. And I'll speak to you soon. Bye for now.
Manx Radio Saturday Sport.
Why don't you join me for another one? Join me.